regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program. Hopefully you had a great weekend. And your Monday is going well, too. We're going to be talking with Rick Travis from the California Rifle and Pistol Association here in just a second. Some rare good news out of the California legislature to talk about. It is that may be one of the first times in 20 years of doing Cam and Company that I've actually said that phrase, good news coming out of the California legislature. Unfortunately, something I've said a lot since I started doing Cam and Company back in 2004, we've got some bad news to talk about out of the California legislature as well. But it is always nice to have something good to talk about in the Golden State for gun owners, because that is, generally speaking, a rare occasion. I mean, we've actually seen some legal success at the U.S. District Court level, even some success at the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. But, man, the State House in Sacramento, that is a tough nut to crack. And yet, the California Rifle and Pistol Association appears to have done that, at least with one piece of legislation. Take a look and a listen. Rick, thanks so much for coming on the program. It's good to talk to you, sir.
Thank you for having me. Very excited.
Yeah, I'm excited too, because you know, normally, and we do have some gun control bills to talk about, but normally that's all we're talking about. But we actually have some good news to discuss today, right? It's an improvement, a legitimate improprovement for not only gun owners, but maybe more importantly for firearm retailers in the state of California.
Correct.
So what's going on, Rick?
So we talked a few months ago at the beginning of the session about a couple of things. We had a bill, Assembly Bill 584, by Assemblymember Heather Hadwick. And I got mocked pretty openly, as I said at the time, because, you know, there's rules, obviously, in every capital. And then there's the legendary rules or the guidelines that everybody lives by. And one of those is you never, ever, ever have a freshman member of the legislature run a bill, especially a gun bill, because it's going to get fried the minute it gets to public safety or its equivalent in any other state. And that's the land where, you know, roughly 2/3 of the bills die in this state when they get to public safety. I mean, it's just the harshest committee of all. And the second thing is you never be a CRPA, an NRA, gun owners of anything and say, hey, I'm going to run a bill and I'm going to sponsor it. You usually do what we call Trojan horse legislation is you get somebody else to do it. You may write it, you may push it, support it, write letters of support, but you put somebody else's name on it and Trojan horse it to get it through, because that's also a kiss of death. And I said, well, you know what? We've been doing this for decades and no one's got a bill across in decades. So what if we break all the rules? What if we just break them all? And nobody said anything to me other than have fun with that. It's not going to last long. And so I sat down, worked with one of our lawyers, and we went back and forth, because the problem we had in California is we have a penal code like everybody else. And our penal code was written in the 80s when it came to the doors on any FFL dealer. And what it said was you had to have bars, which you could put things around to pull the door off. You had to have a doorknob, which you, again, could put something on and pull the door off. But that's what was considered secure, like in the late 80s. Meanwhile, we all know there's been great door companies like Trident have come out with incredible doors that have panic bars and things. So in the case of a fire, shooting, an earthquake, et cetera, people could get out. But at the same time, you couldn't get in and you couldn't latch things to outside. So obviously, if you want to keep your store safe, you want that door. Fire code said you could have it, but that created a conflict between the fire code and the penal code. And therein lies the game playing that came in from our attorney generals like Becerra and currently Bonta, who would sit there and say, oh, you spoke out against us. Of course, you can never prove it. But then all of a sudden, you start getting DOJ agents coming by saying, Cam, your door is bad. Here's a $5,000 fine. And they would also hit, which a lot of people don't think, and that is the landlord, because a lot of gun dealers don't own the building. They lease. And the landlord's like, I'm not going through this mess of door on, door off, door on, door off. No, you're not doing that to my building. You're out. And they'd kill the lease.
Oh, wow. So
one harm to all the people in California is we had a decline in gun stores. You know, just you started losing all your mom and pop stores. Hmm. They also started going after the big chains that we had out here and doing the same thing to them. So those prices, you know, if you're paying $5,000 every couple of weeks for a door, that's going to get carried out to the customer and prices go up. And we already have that problem in California. So I went through and we wrote this bill to be so common sense gun safety that it almost made you look like an idiot to say anything against it. And I got a call from one of the members of public safety who said, wow, this is a nasty little bill that you wrote. And I'm like, it's not meant to be nasty. It's meant to fix stuff. He goes, yeah, but we can't even talk about this bill. And I'm like, well, you got to talk about it. That's the rules. You know, it's not exactly. He said, you'll see. And I'm thinking, okay, this would be interesting. And I'll come on camp's thing to say, oh, they came up with a new way to say, nope. And instead, they put us on consent calendar. And for people that don't understand, consent calendar is like, hey, Cam, as a committee, we're going to take a day off this week. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. And they put their 10 little to-dos, and then they just vote that all through so I don't have to talk about it. Well, they put our bill, 584, in the consent calendar. And I'm sitting there with the author ready to testify. Boom, unanimous decision. Oh, yeah, consent. And I'm like, huh? And then the speaker for our public safety said, he goes, this is never going to see the light of day in this house. I'm like, what? He said, it's just not. So it goes over judicial consent, goes over to appropriations consent, goes to the floor cam. I'm thinking, okay, I won't get to talk, but the author will get to talk, and this is where it's going to die. And it rolled through. There were three members, Republicans, that just didn't show up to vote, and everybody else voted it on consent.
Oh, wow.
So at that point, I talked to Chuck, Michelle, our president, and a couple other people and said, well, we got it farther than we ever thought we would, but you know, now it's going to die because it's going to the Senate. Senate's always a little bit more scrutinous. Same thing happened. So most of our bills, as we'll talk about some other bills, don't end up getting to the final desks until late August.
Okay.
Works. This is June. And we go straight in for the final vote, and we cleared both houses with 95% of the vote, which in California, as screwed up as we are, nobody gets 95% of the vote. Like, it just doesn't happen.
Yeah.
On consent, by the way. Just goes straight through, and then it goes to Newsom's desk. And I said, well, at least I got to the governor's desk. So we started trying to get appointments to the governor. Could not get an appointment. The author's office and I are going, hey, we just want to be able to talk to somebody, you know, give our pitch. We didn't get anything. And then a week ago, on Monday night at 10:30 at night, we get one of the governor's aides that calls and said, oh, sorry, I forgot to tell you. Yeah, he signed it today. So I had to push, and I'm like, hey, is there any chance we could get an autographed copy of the bill? Because that's something you can do sometimes.
Right.
Yeah, that's going to happen. Yeah, you'll get it. And I was like, oh, okay. And so the bill got through. It's the first pro-Second Amendment bill in over three decades to get through the houses. And it's the first one, according to the governor's office, that's had no committee hearing in over 100 years.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's amazing. I mean, you know, and listen, I mean, you know, I'm sure that there are folks outside of California who say, okay, well, it's about doors. What's the big deal? Right. But again, as you talked about, this was a way for Cal DOJ to harass gun store owners. This was a way for landlords who might have been looking for an excuse to, you know, drop the lease. Or you're right. It gave them an easy out. So what changes now? So they can actually have these doors that are better for security, right? But didn't comply again with the penal code.
So several things have changed. One, the governor didn't put out a statement, but immediately DOJ has said, yes, these doors are now approved.
Okay.
Have clawed back all their agents, have clawed back the whole process. We had several people that didn't realize we were trying to get to do it and said, we don't know what you did, but wow. Thank you. Because they are. Our dealers are harassed. Our FFLs, our auction houses, everybody is just penalized for everything. I mean, we have an auction house out here this week that just got told they have to use a certain type of foam and go through this whole other process to ship guns out of California, which, guys, are trying to do what you want them to do, which is get the guns out of California.
Right.
You're still going after them. You know, and we have some other crazy bills, and they nitpick every aspect of the Second Amendment. So getting this through was incredible. It's also incredible because now we have people in the legislature like, oh, this can happen. And the most amazing part was I was able to go back to our president, Chuck Michel, and sit there and say, normally I'm beating doors down in January to try to get a bill heard, just to try. I've had 7 phone calls from 7 different offices, and we're currently working on legislation for January right now to try to get it ready. Because now they say, oh, we might be able to make this happen. So let's do it. So
what do you think? I mean, what do you think changed here, Rick? Why did this sail through the legislature?
I think there's a couple of things that have changed in the Capitol that we've been working on. And my biggest thing is it's taken time. I mean, our community loves a quick fix. I mean, let's just be honest. We love like, oh, my gun doesn't work right. Let's change this, change that. And not well, because it's never us. So my whole thing with this was we had nobody going to the Capitol on what we call a Capitol day, you know, because our community also doesn't like to show up to stuff unless it's a big rally. They'll show up for a big rally, but spend a whole day going in a bunch of legislators' office, especially people that are anti-2A, no. And I worked really hard with another member at CRPA, and we trained up about 150 people from across the state, and we take them to the Capitol twice a year now. One day it's primarily women, the other day it's women, kids, adults, people like you and I, all backgrounds, all cultures, and we go into every office that we can possibly get into and tell them who we are, what our story is. We fight the narrative against us. That has caused several people that I would call in the moderate section to go, okay, look, that's a BS story that we're getting from the opposition. We're not listening to that anymore. That has softened the blows. That has caused a lot of those people to help us kill legislation, but just not voting for it, not showing up for the vote, which for me, that's as good. I mean, I get the game. The other issue has been that has also led to us working with the Outdoor Sporting Caucus. We have more people going out and learning to shoot. You know, I now have, I never thought I'd say this, but I have a vice chair in the assembly who's African-American from Oakland, who after going out, she was, you know, trained by Kamala Harris's group and everything. So obviously not pro-2A, went on her first duck hunt. I think anybody that's ever duck hunted would hate her for this, but she limited out on her first day. And wasn't really assisted by many of us. She picked us up really, really fast. No intended, you know, pun intended, but like a duck to water. She just picked us up. And she is now an avid duck hunter. And in the Second Amendment area, she is not the standard cookie cutter Democrat and has led people. So I think it's some of that's happened. Governor Newsom is a lame duck, so he's losing some of his control. They're chewing themselves up like Democrats are everywhere else.
Yeah.
Now, looking at other legislation the governor's tried to get through, the supermajority is not working because there's a group of Dems that are breaking ranks, and we've had a couple of Dems that switch parties.
Interesting. All right, let's talk about one of the gun control bills that is making its way through the legislature. It's passed out of the assembly. I think it passed out of Senate Judiciary. This is the bill banning the sale of Glock handguns, Rick. Yeah. I mean, this is amazing to me. You know, we've seen litigation against Glock filed in Chicago. I think the state of Illinois is also considering a similar Glock ban. New York introduced a bill, but it didn't go anywhere in New York. This is a couple of stops away from hitting the Senate floor here. Do you think that this bill is likely to pass?
So we're talking about Assembly Bill 1127. It comes from Assembly Member Gabriel, who's the one that started the nationwide excise tax issue of 11%.
Okay.
So, an evil person. And Gabriel, so there's a couple things on this bill that I think are important for the audience to understand. Number one, its biggest proponent is a former member of Glock. He's a former vice president who testifies for this bill, pushing it, which is interesting. You know, when myself or Sam Paredes of Gun Owners of California go in to talk about this, Sam and I both, we boil when we see this guy doing this. But what is really interesting in this bill is basically, you know, California is in a different situation than most of the people that listen to your program. We're still stuck on Gen 3. We haven't been able to move to one of the more modern generations of Glocks, which Glock has made changes, including safety changes. One of those changes is what's called the Glock switch. If you're in the latest generation, it doesn't work. You can't put it on the Glock. So when this bill first came up, my first thing I said in testimony was, well, this is an easy fix. We don't even need this bill. DOJ, go kick off of what we call our roster here of what guns are approved. Get rid of the Gen 3s, put on the newest gen. Done. And they didn't want to do that, which is why I've told everybody, this is not about safety. This is about finding ways to ban a specific firearm.
Yeah.
Anybody fall into that safety crap, because that's what it is.
Yeah.
And that's what they keep running up is, we're going to save lives. Well, if you want to save lives, change it over. The only hope we have is they have not given law enforcement a way out of this. But even in there, this has been the irony. We've had other companies that sell firearms to law enforcement trying to help this bill get through, because then that would get rid of the Glock firearms and they could sell their firearms. So, you know, it's another one of those cases of shooting inside the Second Amendment tent where all of us are fighting. So this bill will most likely, the only place we might be able to stop it is appropriations, and that won't be until the end of August, because California is nearing $100 billion debt ceiling. And we saw some really horrible bills during the first final, before we moved houses, die just based on finances. You know, some pretty anti-second people walked forward and said, yeah, I'm killing the bill. We just don't have the money, and just killed it. So this could die there, but it would only be dead for 2025. They'd roll it back really hard next year.
Yeah. All right. Well, obviously, we'll be keeping our eyes on what's going on with appropriations, and we'll have you back. I mean, I got to ask, Rick, are you ready to name names about these companies that are,
no,
are pushing this? Okay. I had to ask. And if this bill becomes law, will you start naming names?
Yes, I will.
Okay.
Then I will.
All right. That is good to know. And to any of those unnamed companies that might be watching out there, shame on you for doing that. I mean, that is absolutely outrageous. All right. Listen, I hope that we can defeat this bill. What is it? It's AB 1127. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay. All right. And what should people be doing right now? Should they be contacting their state senators?
Yeah, they should be doing that. They should also be going to crpa.org. We have now one-click politic that when they hit a button, we made this so easy. They hit a button, it automatically sends to every member of that committee a letter.
Oh, nice.
They can hit a second button, and it does a tweet or an X, whichever one you want to call it, and we'll also post to Facebook. So we've made this so you don't have to spend 30 minutes doing it. You spend about 25 seconds, and we do the rest of the work for you.
That is fantastic. CRPA.org, that's the website. Rick Travis, thank you as always for joining me on the program, man. It's great talking with you. I'm glad to hear some good news, and I'm glad to see that you're on top of AB 1127 and some of the other bills too out there. We'll have to have you back again, because that is far from the only threat to our Second Amendment rights in Sacramento, but appreciate everything you're doing up there, my man.
Thank you very much.
And thanks to Rick for joining us on the program, and we will be keeping our eyes on AB 1127, but as Rick said, CRPA.org makes it very easy to contact the members of the Senate Public Safety Committee. Maybe it's appropriations that's the next stop. But anyway, 1127, you can find out more information at CRPA.org. Right now, let's turn our attention to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We'll start there. I don't know if the subject in question actually has a previous criminal history, but again, this is just one of those what the heck are they thinking sentences. Florida predator given probation for pepper spraying rich men and stealing luxury watches off of their wrists. Now, the rich men south of Richmond in question may not have been seriously hurt, but they were physically assaulted here. 20-year-old Esther Torres, according to the New York Post, avoided jail time and instead was sentenced to 5 years probation last week following two incidents in which she isolated her victims and then sprayed them, robbing one of them of an expensive Hugo Boss watch, another of a $22,000 Rolex back in late March. First incident took place at the Breakwater Hotel in Miami Beach. The 20-year-old pepper spraying the victim, then taking his watch off of his wrist. She then also robbed him of more than $200 in cash and American dollars and euros as well, made off of several of his credit cards. Then during the second incident, she allegedly pepper sprayed another man at the Fontainebleau Hotel in Miami, taking a $22,000 Rolex Submariner from the victim. Victim told police in that incident the mace attack left him temporarily blind. The owner of the Sherbrooke Hotel, located just a couple of minutes away from where the first incident took place, Mitch Novick, told WSVN, we have a predator, and she's preying on male victims. Novick said he handed over surveillance footage from his hotel to help police identify Torres. They were looking for her, apparently, in April when she arrived at the scene of another person's traffic stop after the man who was behind the wheel was arrested. She was later identified as a suspect in the two robberies by her driver's license, which she had provided to police there at the scene. Finally brought to justice in May, arrested by police during another traffic stop. Police released a body-worn camera footage of her arrest showing her dressed in a strapless white top and hair bonnet, being asked by police if she has any weapons on her. No, she said. She did have a child in her car when she was taken in. The child picked up before Torres was taken to jail. Initially charged with two counts of robbery in the first degree, was ordered detained without bond. But last month, she was granted a recognizance bond. And then again, pleaded out to nothing more than probation. So, you know, some of these cases can take years to resolve, but I guess prosecutors offered her a deal. Esther Torres realized, I'm an idiot to say no to this. I don't have to go to prison. And no longer apparently in the court system. Now, as long as she stays out of trouble for the next 5 years, she doesn't have to worry about going to jail. And honestly, even if she doesn't stay out of trouble over the next 5 years, it is an open question as to whether or not she will actually have to serve any time. Today's armed citizen story from Shelby County, Tennessee, where police say a woman was shot in self-defense while breaking into a home. That individual, one of three people who have been charged in this incident. The Shelby County Sheriff's Office says 21-year-old Kamari Burnham was with two other alleged accomplices when they broke into a family's home. Deputies responded just before 10 p.m. last Wednesday night, and found a woman suffering from an apparent gunshot wound. The Shelby County Sheriff's Office says the incident also appears to be domestic, so this wasn't apparently a robbery. This was, some type of relationship gone wrong. According to the Sheriff's Office, Burnham was taken to a nearby hospital, listed in critical condition after deputies performed life-saving measures. She is now been upgraded to a non-critical condition. Detectives determined that Burnham, along with two others identified as 22-year-old Dewan Payne and 21-year-old Naya Kelly, showed up at this home uninvited, began banging on the front door, threatening a woman who lives inside the home. Burnham and Kelly then kicked in the front door of the home. That's when the resident inside fired a single shot at the intruder, striking Burnham. The sheriff's office says the victim had asked the group several times to leave, was in fear for the safety of herself and her children. And the victim, not facing any charges, the suspects, however, charged with aggravated burglary. Burnham and Kelly also charged with misdemeanor vandalism for kicking in that door. And yeah, when somebody kicks in your door after you've warned them to leave, I would say you have a legitimate fear of death or great bodily injury. And so I think the prosecutors and the sheriff's office making the right call there and saying that the victim in this case will not be facing charges. Finally, today, our good deed of the day. In the right place at the right time, willing able to do the right thing. A good Samaritan in California who helped a kidnapping victim. The suspect now behind bars because of the quick thinking and the willingness to get involved on the part of this Good Samaritan. It happened to be a woman who was driving through the area in Hesperia last Friday, and she saw something unusual in the car in front of her. So she called 911. She said that a man was physically assaulting the passenger who was in his car. According to police, the passenger was screaming for help, had tried to exit the vehicle several times, but the driver kept pulling her back in. And so this woman actually followed the vehicle on the phone with 911, giving the dispatcher, updated directions on where this car was located, until police got there. Actually, I don't even know if police had ever got there. At one point, the vehicle stopped. The woman did get out of the car and then ran to the Good Samaritan's vehicle, actually got into the Good Samaritan's car. According to the Victorville Daily Press, 23-year-old Jacob Michael Fernandez was found a couple of minutes later sitting in this car, his hands covered in blood, It's determined that Fernandez had a knife and he had actually cut the victim several times. Thankfully, superficial wounds, and the victim didn't want to be taken to a local hospital for treatment. But Fernandez ultimately taken into custody, evaluated at a hospital, booked into jail. A knife seized from his car as evidence. He was arrested on suspicion of kidnapping, attempted murder, making criminal threats, and resisting or obstructing police. According to authorities, Fernandez was known to the victim, but police declined to state how the suspect and the victim knew each other. But again, thankfully, a stranger happened to be in the right place at the right time, was not willing to let this go, and was able to provide sanctuary for this kidnapping victim, who it sounds like is going to be okay. You know, again, just, I mean, looking at this from maybe a Second Amendment perspective, I'm glad that this woman followed Fernandez. She did put herself at risk. I don't know if she was a concealed carry holder, but, you know, in circumstances like this, I think it is, it's not only better, I think it is a wiser course of action. If you are prepared to protect yourself and defend yourself, if you decide that you're going to start pursuing somebody who you know is being violent, right? I'm not saying don't do it. I'm not saying turn a blind eye, but that can go sideways real quick. I'm glad that it didn't happen in this case, but Fernandez could easily have gotten out of his car once the victim got out of the other side, ran to this woman's vehicle, and he could have tried to assault them both. So to me, this is yet another argument as to why we need to be exercising our right to carry whenever possible. I don't know why I hit the stop button there. I'm not sure who's going to be with us on 2A Tuesday, but we will be back with more of the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation. And in the meantime, be sure to check out BearingArms.com throughout the day. We're keeping you up to date on all of the latest news impacting your right to keep and bear arms. If you like what you see, I'd also encourage you to become a VIP. VIP Gold or VIP Platinum member, just use the promo code FIGHT and you can get 60% off your membership. You got all kinds of great benefits no matter what tier of support you choose. And again, no matter what tier you choose, we are grateful for your support for our independent pro-Second Amendment journalism. Have a great rest of your Monday. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.